People do amazing things every day, and yet most of us feel like we can't do our taxes ourselves. That doesn't make any sense. TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can do anything. Yes, even taxes. And with TurboTax Live, you have access to CPAs on demand who are available even on nights and weekends to answer your questions or give you advice to help make sure you do your taxes right and get your best possible refund. TurboTax. All people are tax people.
Batter up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCake, and I am joined this week by Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
Maggie could not be with us this week, but we're having another short sort of social distancing episode of A Pod of Their Own, since, you know, nothing is going on in baseball, as has been true for many a week now. This is episode 43 of A Pod of Their Own, and we thought that we would kind of have two topics to discuss today. Obviously, we already had sort of a breaking news pod when Noah Syndergaard's UCL tear kind of first broke. But I figured it would be a more interesting discussion to kind of talk about the ethics of Noah Syndergaard, Chris Sale, and other pitchers getting Tommy John surgery during this time, because many hospitals have ended elective surgeries altogether, because obviously they have to direct as many resources as they possibly can to COVID-19 patients and response.
They kind of went around it by not doing the surgery in New York, but it's still, like, Florida is still hit too, so it doesn't matter where you get it done. You're still taking resources away.
Yeah. Florida's about to be a hell of a lot worse than it is now, and they're trying to blame New York for it, but...
Uh-huh. Yeah, not the people at the beach. It's all New York's fault.
Yeah, yeah. It's all the snowbirds from New York that are coming to Florida. Yeah, okay, buddy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's your own house under control before.
Yeah, it's not the fact that you didn't close the beaches. But yeah, so Florida is not exactly like been spared it by any stretch of the imagination. No part of the country has been completely spared. We're gonna get to the point where there are cases all over the place. I mean, we're already getting there. Obviously, there are certain parts of the country, namely New York, California, Washington, and obviously New York meaning like the whole tri-state area, not just New York and New York State. New Jersey's been hit pretty hard, but there are hot spots, but obviously this touches everywhere, and the cases are going to keep going up. They're saying that the peak is probably going to be somewhere between 2 weeks to a month from now, depending on where you live.
Which is a scary thought.
Yeah. So obviously everything's on lockdown bare minimum for that long, and probably longer. I know Toronto just canceled like all events like up until June 30th, right?
Yeah. They say sports are exempt from it now.
Oh, okay.
But I don't see how you can realistically, like, or even if they try to get around it, like, since there's only one team in Canada or in Toronto in each league, but I don't know how you can get around that. I would maybe bring it back in July without fans. I think that's probably the best way to go at this point, but
yeah,
I don't know. Just it's seeming less and less likely that any sports are going to be played this year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm with you, Linda. I'm of the mind that I feel icky about Noah Syndergaard getting Tommy John surgery during this. It feels like he's utilizing his privilege to get something that most people wouldn't be able to get. And I understand the argument, because there is the argument that this surgery is necessary for these players' livelihoods, which is true. However, I kind of have two counter arguments to that. One is that these people are still richer than any of us will ever be in our lives. Even if Noah Syndergaard's career ended tomorrow, he would still have accumulated more money playing baseball than many of us will ever make in our entire lives. So it's not like they'll be out of house and home. It's not like they will be poor without more money from baseball. But it's still, it sucks to not be able to play the game that you love and to do the thing that you love. I get it. But the other counter argument is that there are people right now who rely on the physical health of their bodies to do their jobs who need like hip replacements and knee replacements who aren't getting them.
Yep. So, that's kind of how, that's kind of like how I felt too. But at this, and the other argument was, well, he was in Florida, so what difference does it make? But, you know, like we said, they are about to get hit. And it's not just that, it's the masks, it's the gowns, it's, you know, the time away from the doctors. Like, you're stealing resources, or not stealing, but those resources could have gone to where they were needed more, to where they could do more good over a longer period of time. Instead of helping just Noah Syndergaard get Tommy John surgery, they could have been used to helping like 10 COVID patients. Like, one doctor could have worn that gown and seen 10 COVID patients. So that's where it gets a little more icky, I think, is stealing resources, redirecting resources to people that could have been helped. But I don't know if we can blame Noah, because obviously he's going to want to get it done. It's his livelihood. It's his life. And he's every right to, you know, feel that way. But we're blaming the system that, you know, it's not just him getting Tommy John surgery. It's James Dolan getting tested. It's all the Nets players getting tested. It's the Jazz players getting tested. We have a system that just favors the wealthy. And that's just how it is right now. And, you know, maybe we can recognize that and maybe channel our anger towards that and fixing that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I agree. We should blame the system, not Noah Syndergaard, for, you know, benefiting from said system.
Yeah, like Chris Sale isn't going to turn it down either. These are their livelihoods. And I get that. And I get that it's scary for them too. They don't know, you know, if they're going to be the same pitchers again, or they don't want to delay, or if they delay it, will it be worse? Will they ever pitch again? And I get that. So I don't totally blame them for wanting to get it done. But, you know, again, we've seen where this country's priorities are, and it's pretty ugly.
Yeah. And actually, Emma Bachelary of Sports Illustrated wrote pretty much an article on pretty much this exact topic about whether it's, you know, ethical for players to get Tommy John surgery during this crisis. And she interviewed a bunch of medical ethicists and things like that for that piece. So I highly recommend you read it. But what was interesting is that, you know, coming out of that piece, because obviously she tweeted it out like every writer does when they write something, and Pete Alonso hopped into replies to defend Noah Syndergaard. And, you know, he's just, like, people got mad at him for this, and I get it, but, like, he's gonna defend his teammate. And
of course.
I think, again, it's about, like, Noah Syndergaard himself is getting a lot of shit for this, and it's about, like, not directing the ire at the player for, you know, wanting to preserve his livelihood. So Alonso tweeted in response to Emma's story, he tweeted, "Who is to judge someone's medical needs in order to perform their job? Noah's surgery or any other athlete's surgery during this time shouldn't be scrutinized, considering it is done by orthopedic surgeons, not those on the front lines battling the pandemic." And Alonso has been, you know, one of the biggest supporters of healthcare workers during this time. He's donated money. Mm-hmm. He's publicly, you know, tweeted and put on his Instagram story all sorts of support for healthcare workers. But yeah, he's, you know, he makes a good point about, like, orthopedic surgeons, like, not being the ones that are taking care of COVID patients. But like you said, Linda, it's the supplies that are the problem in the space, the physical space in the hospital, the masks that the surgeons have to use because they have to wear masks when they're performing any surgery.
And I think out of that article and all the ire, I think they just announced today that they're stopping all Tommy John surgeries.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure I saw a tweet about that they're stopping everything, so...
I didn't see that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it seems to have gotten through.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's a fuzzy line. I mean, I definitely am frustrated at the system and the way that the rich people seem to be getting preferential treatment, not just when it comes to elective surgeries, but when it comes to, you know, getting tests and things like that. Like, you see all these celebrities who have mild cases who would normally be turned away for a test because they're not severe enough.
Yeah, that's what kills me. They're like, they're asymptomatic and staying at home. Then how did you get tested?
Yeah, exactly.
People who have like 103 fevers can't get tested, but they're asymptomatic and somehow magically a test appeared.
Yeah, like Idris Elba is all like, I tested positive for COVID, but it's cool, guys. I'm home. I'm doing okay. It's like, how'd you get a test then? No one else
I think they said James Dolan is asymptomatic. So, first of all, why did he even get a test done? And second of all, where'd the test come from?
Yeah. So, it's, you know, ethically questionable. Even, like, the medical ethicists themselves that Emma interviewed, one of them called it, quote, a really fuzzy line, which I think is, like, a good way to describe it. At the time that it was done, it was legal. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
It was legal, but it's not, I would call it not exactly ethical.
But it's icky, like we said.
Yeah. And if they really are putting a stop to Tommy John's, that's interesting because there have been a few pitchers since Sale and Syndergaard who have been recommended for Tommy John surgery.
Yes, Sir Anthony Dominguez was just recommended. Yeah.
Sir Anthony Dominguez of the Phillies has a torn ECL and was recommended for Tommy John and, to my knowledge, has not had it yet. So now he may not be able to have it.
Yeah. It looks like both CBS Sports and Sport Illustrated have the story. Dr. James Andrews halts Tommy John surgery during coronavirus pandemic.
There you go. So,
I don't know if it's just James Andrews or if it's
everyone.
Doctor.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, like, I agree with that action, even if it's like, you know, better late than ever, so to speak. But I do feel bad then for like Sir Anthony Dominguez.
Yeah, it's
like,
not I can fair.
No, I can't.
I'm gonna say no. It's kind of not fair to him.
Yeah,
like, oh, I was diagnosed too late. I guess
it sets his timeline back a lot. I mean, like, obviously, like, who the heck knows when we're gonna get baseball back again? So. Like, obviously, you know, if this season is lost entirely, you know, that gives Noah a whole year to recover. And since he got his surgery, you know, on Thursday, he's probably going to be ready for, like, early next season. Probably not opening day 2021, but, like, close.
Maybe, like, May.
Yeah, like, May 2021-ish, if his recovery goes, you know, according to the general Tommy John recovery.
No guarantee.
But and especially because, like, who knows, like, obviously pitchers like Sir Anthony Dominguez are going to be significantly delayed if they can't get their Tommy John until after elective surgeries resume. But even pitchers like Sale and Syndergaard, who got their Tommy Johns now, their recovery timeline may be delayed from the typical Tommy John surgery recovery timeline because they can't work out at all.
Yeah, no rehab.
Yeah, so, like, how are they exactly rehabbing? I mean, they can do some activities, but the, like, official team workouts and such like that are off. I mean, I know that during the, like, height of this crisis, like, obviously, Noah Syndergaard is not going to be doing really anything because right after surgery, you're just resting. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this affects their timelines in any significant way because of the inability to do true rehab for a while.
And that's for, like, anybody, too, who are still trying to recover, like, Cespedes. He's still trying. Lowry, like, what are they doing? Can they go to rehab? I don't know.
Trying to make me go to rehab.
I said no.
Anyway, it's the same.
Actually, the CDGC said no.
Try to make me go to rehab. CDC said
no.
Oh man.
Should I name that the title of the?
Yeah, I think that's the title of this show.
Yeah,
try to make me go to rehab. CDC said no. But yeah, so it's interesting. it's one of many like ethical quandaries that have come up with the convergence of COVID and sports, you know, like, and like the biggest one, which I'm not even gonna attempt to answer at this time because it's more like philosophical or meta in nature, is just like, you know, like sports are non-essential if you think about it, like in general. Like,
well, did you see that John Oliver segment? Yes, when he said they're never really important, but they're especially not important right now. I think he summed it up pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with that. So yeah, it's interesting. And obviously this is continuing to develop. And yeah, we'll see how baseball goes. But in the meantime,
although I do kind of have to disagree with that statement, because I am currently watching the Mike Piazza 9/11 game, and sports were kind of important that day.
Yes, so they were very important that day.
They were. So sports are important in their own place and time. How about you with that?
Yeah, ESPN, obviously by the time you all hear this, it'll be too late for this announcement. But ESPN is currently, as we record at 8:30 p.m. On Tuesday night, ESPN is airing the post 9/11 Mike Piazza game. So I'm sure that there are lots of Mets fans tuned into that right now. Including Linda. So maybe you'll get some live interjections, and it'll be like the good old days when we used to pod with games on.
Yeah, I already feel my blood boiling again. I'm like, oh, Javi Lopez. I was like, oh, I hated that guy.
Forgot about Javi Lopez.
I totally forgot about Javi Lopez. And then you showed Chipper Jones's numbers against the Mets. I was like, really? I don't need this right now.
Oh, man.
but Piazza brought it that game. He already has two doubles and a run scored.
Yeah. Yep.
But then I remember he also said he was nervous because Chipper Jones was running home and he said there was a play at the plate and he goes, and I just flat out dropped the ball. He was like, I was having so hard. It was so hard for me to concentrate. And he was like, and I dropped the ball. And I was like, eh. So now, like, watching that and, like, going through it in my mind, I was like, Mike, you should have had that, man.
Yeah, come on.
Also, but I can't get mad.
Yeah, but on that note, it's actually a good, that's a good segue to our next topic of discussion. So we asked folks to tweet at us, email us, et cetera, about the best game that they've ever been to in person. And we've curated all the responses, which I will read in a little bit, but I will read one of them first because it's about this particular game. Because Vaz, fellow Amazing Avenue writer and curator of the March Madness tournament, among other things at Amazing Avenue.
Which you should be voting in.
You should be voting in because we're down to the home stretch now. So Vaz was present at this game, which is crazy.
That is crazy. I don't think I've ever met anybody who was at that game, and now I have.
I know. So he wrote about this game. A lot has already been said and written about this game, but it was a truly surreal experience. My mom and I decided to get tickets about an hour before the game, which I'm amazed that there were tickets an hour before.
I am too. Anyway.
Besides Piazza's home run, the thing I vividly remember is the Mets and Braves shaking hands before the game. As a kid who hated the Braves, as all Mets fans did, seeing them put the rivalry aside for this moment made the game feel bigger than anything I had experienced up until that point. It really put sports in perspective, but also showed why they're so necessary in times of crisis. So I think that's really well said. Imagine shaking hands.
Yeah,
couldn't be me.
yeah. Wait, that was a thing once.
That was a thing once.
But you know, and then you know, the Mets have been like live tweeting this game, and like you know, they've been having like a lighter, and I think Glendon Rush live tweeting, and Bobby Valentine was like, I don't think we ever figured out what Chipper Jones couldn't hit. So like even that, like, and then Jason Marquis was from New York. It was just so many like little nuances to the game, like just rewatching. And then, you know, they showed the scoreboard wrapped in the red, white, and blue ribbon, which they still have out above Shake Shack, and you know, just seeing New York come together again, like especially given now everything that's going on, it's just I don't know, this it's the weird symmetry right now, just watching this again, And with given everything that's going on and, you know, bringing back all the memories and those bagpipes, man, those first notes of the bagpipes, I lose it every time.
Yeah, that's always rough on the emotions.
Yeah. And then just all their reactions, too. Like, Bobby Valentine, like, getting into it, like, he was, like, nodding along with the USA chants, and then Piazza clearly starts crying on the field. Like, Mike, you can't do this to me.
Yeah, seriously.
Mark Anthony cries just singing the national anthem, and I'm like, oh my god, I remember sitting at home just sobbing on my couch watching this for the first time. And I remember, you know, that was really one of the first times I really cried at a baseball game.
Yeah, same, I think. Yeah, I think that's like, and it's like a big, it was like a big turning point in my fandom. Like, it solidified my fandom. Yeah.
Because I was, for like 99, I was too young. So I didn't really see them lose because it was past my bedtime and I had to go to bed. So, you know, I woke up the next morning disappointed. Like, I went to bed resigned to the fact that they were going to lose.
Yeah.
And so when I woke up, I'm like, oh, they lost. That sounds about right. So I was disappointed, but this was the first time, like, I was heartbroken watching a game, and the first time I remember physically crying at a baseball game. And, you know, I don't think I was alone in that.
Not at all. Not at all.
In 2000, I think I was still, I was in 8th grade in 2000. No, I just dated myself. God damn it. But yeah, no, I was still too young to stay up to watch the World Series. So again, I was resigned to the fact that they were gonna lose. So again, disappointed, but not like sobbing like I was here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So Linda, what are some of the best games you've been to in person?
You know, when we said we were gonna do this segment, I racked my brain to come up with a good answer, and there's so many, and they're all, and I don't know if hindsight makes them more special or if hindsight dims them a little bit, but so I was trying to put myself back in the moment, because then also you have recency bias, and because then if I had flat out recency bias, it would be 8-9, 2019, shirtless Conforto.
That's pretty freaking good, though.
Yes, because Stroman was so good that night. I wrote about it when I came. I think the next day I wrote a little piece for Mason Avenue about it. And I remember at the time thinking watching the Mets bat was boring because you just wanted to see Stroman come back out and watch him pitch because he was so magnetic and just so electric that night because it was his Citi Field debut. And then, you know, then Rendon hit the home run, and, you know, and I was so disappointed because I'm like, the narrative is going to be that the Mets just can't beat good teams, because that was what it was at the time. Like, oh, yeah, they're just beating up on the the Marlins and, you know, bad teams. And so that's what was going through my head. And then, of course, my man JD starts it off with a double, and he had a home run earlier in the game. He's the one who got it started with a home run earlier
underrated
in the game.
Underrated hero of that game, for sure.
He really is. And so he hit the double, and then you're like, oh, okay. Like, you start stirring, and then Ramos hits the single. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, here we go. And then Todd Frazier hit the home run, and I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm like, did that really happen? And you know, it was a t-shirt giveaway, so we're all using the t-shirts as rally towels. I remember banging the railing in front of me, and, you know, people were just high-fiving, going crazy. But then I sat back down, and I was like, God damn it, because Luis Avila came in the inning before and gave up a wild pitch. Right. And Trey Turner scored. So it's like, that should have been a walk-off. So then I started getting mad because I'm like, that should have ended the game. And then, Joe Panic, I give him credit for batting after that and getting a hit. And then Rosario kept it going. And then Jeff McNeil hit a ball to foul territory, like a little bit past first base, but everybody like started cheering.
Yeah.
because you start watching with your heart and not your head. And it's like, clearly that ball was going nowhere, but we all jumped out of our seats. But that was, I think, the second out. And then, oh yeah, because Lagares, I think, got trying to bunt or didn't get it or something. But that was the second out. And then Conforto came up, and you could tell it was well hit. And because he was having a nice at bat, he was fouling pitches off and stuff, and you could tell it was well hit. And, you know, you see Eaton running after it, and like, ah, oh, it's stupid, Eaton. And then all of a sudden, he just stopped. And
yeah, I think he could have caught
it. I think so, too. I was like, huh?
He bailed on it big time.
He did. I really thought he was going to catch it. But then all of a sudden, I see it, because we sit behind home plate, but just, like, in the promenade level. So pretty much everything's in front of us. So, you know, we were tracking it, and I could see Eaton chasing it. And then I see it just drop on the warning track. We're all going nuts. I was like it was the kind of game like you're so amped later on that you can't go to bed.
Yeah.
That was how I felt, like, you know, you had to listen to the post game and like sitting in traffic, like leaving. Everybody's beeping their horns to like, let's go Mets in the parking lot. Like the stadium workers were all like cheering as we're leaving. So I wanna say it was that one. But the game after the one where Flores game in 2015, I think, also ranks up there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, when they completed the sweep of the Nationals. Noah Syndergaard, again, was electric that night. He struck out Bryce Harper on, like, 100-mile-per-hour fastball to end his night, and Harper just stood there looking confused. Like, I have that image burned in my memory because it was so beautiful. Good. And that was when Grandy, Murph, and Duda hit home runs in the same inning.
In the span
of like five pitches or something. And we were saying, I got tickets. It was the 4 for $48 deal because DeGrom was in the All-Star game, and I got tickets for $11 each, and we were on field level.
That's awesome.
And we were right by we were down the right field line in like that section that kind of juts out. And so we saw all the balls coming towards us, towards the Pepsi porch, and we're like, here it comes again.
Here comes another one.
I'm like, look out, here it comes. So, and then ESPN kept, like, I didn't realize it was in the shot of the ESPN camera. So I was on ESPN, like, looking like a fool the entire night. Because then my cousin texts me and he goes, Syndergaard's going to need that kind of energy for the stretch run. It's a scream caption. I'm like, oh, Robbie. So that was, and so I kind of weigh those two. But hindsight, you know, 2015, they ended up making it. Like, that game meant more.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know.
It meant more later than it did, like, in the moment, I guess.
Yeah. And then that, like, they'd already won the first two games. So, it's like, okay, we already got the series. Let's, you know, this is fun. And then I remember in, I think it was Tears of Joy, that SNUI documentary. Yep. Ronnie said, the Nationals got a taste of their own medicine. The bullies got bullied.
Yep.
And that's always kind of stuck with me is, you know, we finally kind of stood up for ourselves because we'd been, you know, the Nationals' punching bag for so long up to that point. So, and, you know, but the both games were against the Nationals, too. I think that also makes it a lot sweeter.
Yeah, definitely.
So those are my two. But then, of course, you know, David Wright's final game. I was there for Mike Piazza's first game back when he got after he left and went to the Padres.
I was there too.
Were you like, because everybody always confuses this because they always say it's the game he hit the home run in, and it's not. That was the second game.
Yeah.
Because the first game, I think he just got a double. And then, because then we were all chanting, like, my Piazza the whole game. And then we started chanting Paul LaDuca.
Yep, yep. I was at that game, too. We've been to so many of the same games.
And, like, they had the whole tribute beforehand. And, you know, that was kind of an emotional day. And just like the David Wright game, you know, I missed the first the opening ceremonies. But
yeah, you were stuck in traffic.
I know, I was stuck in traffic. So I wasn't prepared for him to leave because for me it just seemed like so soon because I had just gotten there.
Right, right.
So, So I remember my brother saying, "No, don't take him out." And I was like, "What? What do you mean? Like, it's only the fifth inning. He's not leaving." And then all of a sudden, I see him start walking, and then the Captain America theme song. I was like, "Oh no, they're playing the Captain America theme." And then I lost it after that. And it wasn't until later, because my brother said Austin Jackson, Jay Bruce, and Jeff McNeil all took their hats off and put them at their feet as he was exiting the field. And I didn't realize it at the time. I was too, wrapped up in the moment. So I went back to my pictures, and Jay Bruce and Jeff McNeil are standing side by side, and their hats are off, and on their field is, like, I guess, a sign of respect as the captain was leaving. I was like, "Oh my God."
Yeah.
Those little things that you don't pick up on, like, in the moment, because you do get too wrapped up in the moment. But, like, at the same time, I don't want to just be watching it through a phone either.
Right.
So
Exactly.
that's also what I kind of weigh too, because back in 2015, I wasn't as so, like, I have to record this moment as, like, I was 4 years later, or even, like, Mike Piazza's game. I have no pictures from that game because I didn't have a camera phone back then.
Right.
2006. So my memories are different because you don't, you're not so, focused on, I have to get a picture, I have to get a picture, and you can just, enjoy the moment. So, yeah, those are probably my
Those,
main ones.
so between the two of us, because you missed the beginning of the game because you were stuck in traffic, but I was there for this pregame ceremony and everything, and it was obviously super emotional, but
I still
I
haven't
had to leave
watched it.
the I had to leave the game early.
No! You
Because
didn't see the speech
I did
afterwards?
not, no. And
Oh, because we started chanting, like, out, we were out in right field, and it was an awful game. Like, let's be real, it was
yeah, oh, it
an
was
awful
terrible.
game.
Terrible
And
game.
so I want to say, like, it was probably around the 10th inning where everybody in the right field just started chanting, "We want fireworks! We want fireworks!" Because it was fireworks tonight.
Yes, that's right.
So, like, people were just, like, not paying attention. They just wanted the game over. And they're like, "We just want to see Dave again. We just want to say goodbye."
So I didn't expect to have to leave the game early, but obviously the game went extra innings. And so the reason why I had to leave early is because that weekend I had the dog with me. So like at the time I still lived in Baltimore, but I knew I wanted to go to David Wright's final game. Like I was going to go by hook or by crook, no matter what. So but I still lived in Baltimore and I took the dog with me up to New Jersey, because I think my roommate must have been going somewhere that weekend too. And so I had to take the dog with me. And so the dog was back at the house by herself in the crate. So we couldn't leave her there like for too long. Otherwise, obviously, like she has to go out. And so like it's starting to go extra innings and we're like, oh no, I can't leave the dog. So eventually it went too long and we had to leave. So I missed the end, but
Well, for
it is what
us,
it
we're
is.
like, well, we got our full 9 innings worth now.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So between the two of us, we saw the whole game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so that's definitely David Wright's final game is definitely one of my more memorable in-person ones. You brought up the Nationals game. I was at a game, one of my most memorable in-person games, and this is probably my most memorable not Citi Field game. So about a week after the Nationals series, the Mets went to Camden Yards, and so I lived in Baltimore at the time, and so I went to both. It was the same thing that it was like 2 years ago when they played the Orioles, because obviously the interleague play they don't play the Orioles all that often, and so they usually the way they do it is they do two games in New York and two games in Baltimore, and so I went to both games in Baltimore. But one of the two games was a DeGrom start.
Jakey.
It was August 8th, 2015, and it was a seven line army game. And it was their like Baltimore outing. And I
Ah,
had never
shit.
been to a
Sorry.
game.
Oh, okay. I thought Chipper Jones hit a home run, but it
Shit. Reacting to
wasn't.
games from 2001.
No, but it's Chipper Jones.
Larry.
Yeah, but Peyton caught it right at the center field wall, so continue.
So it was the Seven Line Army's Baltimore outing, and so I had never been to like a game with them before, and it was also just like really cool because there were all these Mets fans, and I ended up getting a ticket. I didn't get a ticket to the outing, but I ended up getting a ticket. I knew the section they were sitting in, so I got a ticket to like that section. I just went by myself, and I had a blast because there were all these Mets fans there, and we were just all one big group. And Jake pitched a gem, and the Mets won.
Hell yeah.
And it was really fun. I got to like hold a giant cardboard cutout of Jacob deGrom's head, and like
wasn't that your picture for a while?
Yeah, my profile picture on Facebook. Yes. During like the entire stretch run. Yeah. was me holding the cardboard cutout of Jacob deGrom's head. It was a blast. Like, obviously, like, living in Baltimore, I love Camden Yards. It's my favorite ballpark. I have such like a warm place in my heart for Camden Yards. So whenever the Mets come there, it's a huge treat for me. And so in 2015, it was extra special because the Mets were in the stretch run at that point, and DeGrom pitched a gem, and the Mets had a great game. And so like, and obviously like Adam Jones and Manny Machado were still on the Orioles at that point, so I was getting to watch them play. So
that was when they went to the wild card too, wasn't mm-hmm. it? Like, yeah. They were good. Yeah,
the Orioles were good back then. It's just a special game for me. Even though it's like not a game that particularly stands out in all the great games they had during the second half of 2015, it's a special game for me. So that's a big one for me. Another big one for me, and it was R.A. Dickey's one hit shutout against the Phillies, which you were also at, I think. Yes. We've been to so many of the same games. These other two games that
it's kinda scary.
That I put in my notes are games that Linda's also been to. So R.A. Dickey's one hit shutout
before
against the
Phillies knew each other.
Before we knew each other. Was so much fun. Oh my god. R.A. Dickey's whole season that year was just really, really fun.
Yeah.
Watching him pitch was an event. The team was otherwise pretty bad, obviously. And so,
oof. Yeah, those lineups, man.
Him in that Cy Young season was just, he was something to behold. It was really special. And
he was kind of like a novelty, like, you know, he was a knuckleballer and just dominant. Like, it was like, he just kind of had a, like, what is this really happening? And he was like racking up the strikeouts too. It wasn't like, you know, soft contact. Like, they were, it was like, you know, he would have some high strikeout games. He was dominant.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that one shutout against the Phillies was such a good game. And he, the thing that I remember most from that game isn't even the game itself, although obviously that was really fun, but the standout memory from that game is like coming, like leaving the stadium after the game, like all these people around us in the stairwell were chanting, "You got dickied," clap, 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 "You got dickied," and it was so loud, it was deafening, and it was amazing. And it's kind of like you said with the Nationals, like it's extra special when it's like a memory like that happens against like a division rival. So watching him like completely annihilate the Phillies was just like so satisfying.
I know. It just makes it that extra sweet.
Yeah. So that's up there as far as my favorite games. Another one, just because at the time, this is another one that you like you said, Linda, how like some of them become more special in retrospect and you don't realize at the time that they're special. Like, mm-hmm. this game was good, but I think it's become more special with time because Wilmer Flores, obviously, like, I didn't know at the time that he wasn't going to be a Met, you know?
Yeah.
Soon after that. So Wilmer Flores on July 22nd, 2017, Wilmer Flores hit what turned out to be his last walk-off as a Met. I was at that game. So was I. Yeah, Linda was there too.
And also, what also made it special at the time was because it was right before the deadline. And that was the last time we saw, or yet in person, Grandy and Duda too.
Yeah.
And Duda
that's
had a really
true.
Big pinch hit. I think he got either tied the game or he started the rally or something because he pinch hit late that game.
Yes, you're right.
And then I think Randy came in to pinch run. So they both got into the game, and that was both the last time.
Yeah, that was
I
the
got
last
to
time.
See them in person, and then Wilmer too.
That was the last time we saw them as Mets, and it was Wilmer's last walk off as a Met, and so, which we didn't know at the time, obviously. So it ended up being like it wasn't just like. It wasn't any old walk-off. It was a six-run comeback against the A's.
I think they tied it up in the eighth, and then I think he walked it off in the ninth,
exactly,
if I remember.
Yes. Yeah. So they clawed back from a 5-0 deficit to win 6-5 because Wheeler pitched awful.
Oh, he was awful.
Yeah.
I think he gave up, like, a double to Sean Manaea, and, like, I was like, how do you give up, like, a hit to an American League pitcher that was, like, I think it was, like, a run-scoring double, or it was a big hit. I'm like, Wheeler, man, what are you doing?
So that game seemed like it was going to be awful early.
Awful.
Because they went down 5-0 early, and, like, obviously, like, they didn't come back until late. It wasn't like they clawed back slowly. Like, there was nothing doing, and the whole middle of that game was so boring, and they looked so bad. And then in the eighth, they scored 5 runs, and then Wilmer Flores walked up. It was so fun.
I remember I went to go get ice cream because I wanted to get the ice cream in the home run apple.
Oh, and yeah.
Of course, by the time I got there, because I went, I think, right before the eighth inning, or it was the seventh inning, I think I went. And I'm waiting in line, and of course, they don't have the home run apple and the ice cream. So I'm like, oh, right, I'll just get, you know, it in a cup or whatever. And I'm walking back, and I'll hold my ice cream. And I think, I want to say it was Duda. And I was walking past, you know, where center field is. And I kind of looked out, and I saw the ball coming towards me. So I'm just sitting there holding my ice cream, like, cheering by myself. And, like, because I wasn't at my seat. I'm like, I'm cheering with strangers. I'm like, but I don't want to drop my ice cream. And I finally got back to my seat. I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. I have, like, ice cream dripping everywhere because I stopped to watch. So I was like, well, I see they tied it up. I was like, getting the ice cream, I think, was the good luck charm because they didn't start the rally until I went to go get it. So
obviously, all happened because you went to go get ice cream.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I think I want to say Darnell hit a home run that game, too.
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of like a goodbye. I'm glad I went that day because it was Thor bobblehead night.
Yes.
I think that's why I went.
That's why a lot of people went. A lot of people were there. A lot of people were gone by the time they walked it off.
Yes. They just came, got the bobblehead, and was like, okay, this game sucks, and left. So
it was like a bigger crowd than it would have normally been because of the bobblehead. Yeah. A lot of Amazing Avenue folks were there because of the bobblehead. It was you and me. I know Jeff and Jarrett were there. Rob was there.
Right. We met before the game. I forgot about that.
Yeah. We all hung out before the game. You, me, my parents, Rob and Allison, and then Jeff and Jarrett were there. Yeah.
Yes. Right. I forgot about that.
I ate the giant bratwurst. I remember my dad and I were eating the giant bratwursts. That's my memory of that.
But yeah, it was kind of nice because I got to say goodbye to, you know, that was kind of the end of the era almost.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the team underwent a complete transformation after that.
Yeah.
So that kind of felt like the ending.
Yeah,
and it was kind of fitting that it ended on a Wilmer walk-off.
I actually got to see Lucas Duda in person one more time after that.
Because, from the Orioles.
Yeah, so
he
got
traded on the Royals?
Not on the Royals. That season he got traded to the Rays. Before he was on the Royals, he got signed by the Royals over the offseason, but at the deadline he got traded to the Rays. And so one of the times in September when the Rays played the Orioles, I was like, I want to go because I want to see Lucas Duda. So I made like a last minute game day decision and got tickets, and I like went super early, and I made a sign, and which I don't usually do for Orioles games. Usually I just wear Orioles gear to Orioles games because, like, obviously, except when they play the Mets, I wear Mets gear. But this time I wore my Orioles tank top, but my Mets hat. And I made a big sign that said, we follow Lucas Duda for the Grandy, for the Grandy Instagram account. which I miss so much, by the way.
I do too. What a joy that account was.
Such a good Instagram account. So I made a big sign that said, "We follow Lucas Duda," and then underneath I wrote, "We miss you so much." And I like stood in batting practice and I held the sign up, and Lucas Duda threw me a baseball.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So that's one of my cooler like baseball memories too, of recent years, is Lucas Duda seeing my sign and throwing me a baseball. So that was happy. So yeah,
it is really cute.
Yeah,
way to go, Lucas. Yeah. Actually, I just kind of, you know, when you said how games take on more importance in hindsight, that actually made me remember. We went to a game. It was right after they made the Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe trade. Oh, it was before Cespedes. They called up Conforto the night before. So it was that Saturday. They were playing the Dodgers. And, you know, that was when their offense was awful. And but I think both Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe were in the lineup. And I saw Michael Conforto's first major league hit that night.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he went 4-for-4. They won 15-2. Matt Harvey started and it was really good. It was a 7-line night. And so I remember, you know, scrolling through Twitter because my brother works for a healthcare company. So he buys tickets from a doctor who has season tickets. And so we were there. It was me and my brother, and then the doctor and his wife were next to us. And the doctor at one point goes, "Hey, look, everybody's batting over 200 on the scoreboard." So I was like, we should hang like a mission accomplished banner on the scoreboard. Oh my God. Because they were so bad at the time. And I remember it was just, I think they just scored like a ton of runs in the first inning, and I actually have a picture of Michael Conforto's first hit. I got it. And I remember scrolling through Twitter and Mark Carrig tweeted, he was like, "My first question to Terry after this game is gonna be, what the hell was that?" So that kind of stands out too, because of just, you know, the importance of that game. Like, you know, I saw Michael Conforto's first big league hit. Like, you know, at the time I was kind of excited. I'm like, wow, we just happen to have tickets. And then they called him up the night before. I was like, and then the night before was when they almost got no hit by Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, right. Yep.
And, when it was like, yeah, this is like a foregone conclusion. They're going to get no hit. But Grandy, I think, broke it up. And then the next night they won. Yeah, and then the next night they won 15-2, and it's like, yep. Oh my God, where'd this offense come from? Yeah, this is unheard of. So yeah, that was my other one that probably stands out. And I saw Captain Kirk's 3-home run game.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I was happy for Kirk, because my brother kind of jokingly said, like, oh, he should hit one to every field after, like, he hit the first one. Yeah. And he ended up hitting one to every field. So that was really cool.
A glimpse of what might have been his baseball career.
I know. So those are probably the ones that stick out the most for me. Like I said, it's hard to pick one.
It is. I'm going to do a quick shout out of the game that should have been on my list and isn't, because my brother got to go instead of me and I'm mad. So back when I was in high school, so this was like the mid to late thousands, we got like a pack of games. That was back when we used to go to more games, because obviously I lived in New Jersey. And so we went to like, I think my dad would get like the 12 packs of games.
So
he'd always get 2 tickets, because all 4 of us didn't go at a time ever. It was usually me and my dad, but every once in a while, like, my mom would go to one, or like, and my brother always got to pick, like, my brother always got to go to the game that happened to be closest to his birthday, which is August 22nd.
Okay.
So August 22nd, 2006, guess what happened that day? That was the Carlos Beltran walk-off against the Cardinals. Like, one of the most epic games in, like, Mets history. And my brother and my dad were there, and I was not there. And I'm still so angry.
Well, I have to say, I know for a fact my brother's probably most memorable game is the 10-run inning against the Braves in 2000.
That was a listener submission as well.
Yeah. And so now, no matter what, He refuses, absolutely refuses to leave a game early because of that game.
Yeah, I mean, never leave a game early.
No, there's no clock. You're never out of
I
it.
think the David Wright final game honestly was the first game I've ever left early in my life, I think. And
No.
I only did it 'cause I had to. But
Had
like I
to.
don't think I've ever voluntarily left a game early before, ever.
No.
Nope.
No.
That I can
And
think of.
I don't think I ever will.
Never leave a game early. So yeah, so I will now read the listener submissions because we got many of them, and thank you guys for
Yes,
sending them
thank
in. They
you.
brought us a lot of joy, and so we hope that they'll bring you joy too. So we already read Vaz's one, and you just mentioned the 10-run inning. So we got a submission about that too from Jeff Cohen on Twitter. He said that the best game he's ever been to is June 30th, 2000. Mike Piazza caps off a 10-run inning with a line drive homer. Shea went crazy. So that's the same
Yeah.
as your brother's.
Yeah, my brothers did say it shakes. I wish I got to experience that,
Me
but
too. My parents did because they were there when the Mets won the World Series in
oh, that's
1986.
so awesome.
Assholes.
I know, it's so unfair. And my brother was sitting in left field above where the home run landed, so he never saw it land because he just
Right.
kind of lost sight of it. It went underneath him. So he was just like kind of going on everybody else. And his friend from, he went with his friend from high school, and his friend was like, yeah, sex, I'm leaving. So his friend left. And so my brother was there by himself, like
Sucks
just
to be
like,
him.
yeah, like high fiving strangers and going crazy. And he's like, I still have literally never seen that ball land.
And also give your friend shit for the rest of your lives because deserves it. All right, so Mike Flaherty on Twitter said that his best game was June 11th, 2005, Mets 5, Angels 3. Beltran robbed Benji Molina of a home run. Marlon Anderson tied the game in the bottom of the ninth with an inside the park homer, and Cliff Floyd hit a walk-off homer to win it in extra innings. That's pretty freaking
Wow,
cool.
that's really cool. That you got like that's like what else could you possibly fit in one game?
Yeah, that's a potpourri of fun things. Cliff Floyd, I miss Cliff Floyd. I love him so
I
much.
loved Cliff Floyd, and the fact that he was like David Wright's mentor too. Like he
So
kind of took
good.
him under his wing. Like
So
I
good.
loved Cliff. He was such a great addition. And I think the fact that he was hurt too in the playoffs, I think that hurt them.
From the same like thousands, early thousands era, we've got Ken on Twitter said Benny's game-winning hit. Playoff game against the Giants was the best
Oh.
game. Best
Oh, that's
doubleheader was the Ventura Grand Slam in both. 1999 was the best.
Oh,
Man, yeah, those are
that's
fun games. I'm
awesome.
pretty jealous. Benny
Yeah.
Agbayani ruled so hard. I love him.
Did. I loved Betty Agbayani.
And then we've got a couple of entries. We've got a few entries from the 2015 playoffs, so I'll group those together. We've got Brandon Weber, who was at game one of the 2015 NLCS.
Oh, nice.
The whole night was so crazy. I don't even know I was go I didn't even know I was going until the day before when my friend had last minute tickets. I remember going crazy when Murphy and Darno hit their home runs and when Cespedes made that great throw to home plate. That throw was so good.
Oh, I know.
Oh, and then Abe Rosenberg was at 2015 game three of the NLDS against the Dodgers. First
Oh, that's
postseason game at
nice.
Citi. Crowd was electric. Cespedes bomb. Favorite memory in my lifetime. That game, so good because fuck Chase Utley.
Yeah, forever and ever. And oh, the
The
Cespedes
Cespedes
bat
homer was
flip.
incredible.
And
Oh
but
my
once
God.
again, we can't forget Grandy getting it started. Grandy was probably their MVP.
Yeah.
I know, like Murphy, stole the spotlight, but Grandy was far more consistent, and he was the only one who did anything in the World Series.
It's true. It's true. So speaking of the World Series, our own Dave Capobianco. So he was also at 2015 NLDS Game 3, but he said, "I'm probably writing about my number one best game I've ever attended for the site at some point, which was 2015 NLDS Game 3. So I'll talk about my second favorite game, Game 3 of that year's World Series." It was kind of a surreal experience just walking into the park. The parking lot looked a lot more like a local street fair with how many attractions there were. There were several TV studios set up outside the rotunda. There was a heavy police presence with a fairly large NYPD chopper flying circles over the stadium before the game. and police cars lined up along the street now known as Seaver Way. I had never seen anything like it for a baseball game. I got to see David Wright hit that famous home run, and the reaction to Thor striking out Alcides Escobar after the brush back pitch in the first inning is still the loudest fucking noise I've ever heard. It was cold as hell. My seat might as well have been on the roof. But hey, I went to the World Series, and I was able to pull off some positive memories of that miserable wreckage of that World Series.
Yeah, kid, like, I didn't think of it that way. Like, the stuff outside the stadium, like, you know it's an event. Like, it's something huge that's happening. And that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really jealous of everyone that got to go to the 2015 playoffs. Like,
I am too, because our experience at the playoffs is completely different.
Yeah, because we were both at, again, Linda and I have been to a lot of the same games, folks. That's a theme of this podcast, not intentionally. But yeah, we were both at the So Fucking Taguchi game, and that is my only playoff baseball experience.
Mine too! Because leaving that game, I said, never again. I'm never doing this again.
Well, yeah, I had tickets for the 2015 playoffs, but I had tickets for NLCS Game 7, which obviously did not occur. I mean, like, I'm not mad, because, like, they swept, so, like, how could I possibly be mad? But that would have been a fun game if that had happened. So I would have been at that, but that obviously did not occur.
So I was in the upper deck at Shea in right field, and I remember the ball was hit to left, so I was able to track that thing off the bat. I'm like, no, 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 it's not going to go. No, 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 oh my God!
And it was so fucking cold, too.
Cold!
God.
Especially in the upper deck at Shea. It was so
windy. Yeah, we were in the upper deck. I think we were in the literal last row or close to it. And it was freezing. Oh, what a nightmare.
Where were you? Were you in left, right?
I think we were in, like... like, we were not quite behind home plate. I think we were, like, a little shifted toward the third base side.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got a good view of the damage.
Yes. Unfortunately, yes. But other people went to more pleasant playoff games, like Mark Simon, friend of the pod. Was at 1999 NLCS Game 5, which is so cool. I've ever been at a game. I usually just sit and clap, but I was loud for Masahiro Yoshi for the first pitch, and I was still going when Shawn Dunston came up in the 15th.
I don't know how anybody sat through that, because it poured pretty much the entire game. The oral history of that the Athletic wrote was actually really cool. Like, I have a total new appreciation of Shawn Dunston.
Yeah. We got two email submissions. One is from Jay Wu, who is actually at the same game as you, Linda. He picked one of your games. For a Mets game, I would choose, he said 2020, but I think he means 2019. I would choose 2019 season's game against the Nationals with the Conforto walk-off hit. So in addition, it was Stroman's first home game. Everyone was fired up. That game was never give up work ethic game. Nationals kept getting runs and Mets kept coming back.
Yeah.
Ninth inning, Citi Field was like, wow.
Yeah, pretty much.
As the Mets didn't give up, I didn't give up on my job searching process, even though I had a big issue with my visa. And guess what? I got my work visa approved in February. I have been working in Colorado since March 4th. So that game inspired me a lot, which was really cool.
It is cool.
So, but he also submitted a non-Mets game as his other favorite baseball game he's ever been to, which was the 2009 World Baseball Classic semifinal, South Korea versus Venezuela at Dodger Stadium. He's originally from South Korea, so that game was special to him. He said, watching my home country here in the U.S. meant so much. Everyone said Venezuela will beat South Korea easily because their squads were filled with active MLB rosters like Miguel Cabrera, Bobby Abreu, Carlos Silva, etc. So many Koreans with our flags with our flag at that game. It was probably my best game, the best game in my life for sure. So that's really cool.
That is.
So we also got an email submission from Maggie S. Maggie S. says, the best Mets game I've ever been to was the game on the 4th of July in 2016 against the Marlins. Oh, that's such a good game. The game
before... I was at that game too. Wilmer Flores 6 for 6? Is that that game?
The game before was the game when Wilmer Flores got 6 hits. So
oh, that
at
was
the
one I was at.
So everyone at the stadium went absolutely wild every time he came up to bat, rightfully so. Matt Harvey started the game and quickly let up 6 runs before he got pulled in the fourth inning. However, the Mets somehow were able to slowly chip away at that lead, including Travis d'Arnaud's first home run of the season, and managed to win the game 8-6. It was just an incredible atmosphere to be around as they pulled ahead and ended up winning the game, and by far my best memory at a Mets game. So that's really cool.
Yeah. Okay. So I was there the day before. Yeah, because I got the Cespedes sleeve the day before.
Right. That's right.
And Chris, I met up with Chris McShane at that game, and at one point he pointed this out because I was chatting with him. Jacob DeGrom pinch hit that game, and they had their catcher being like the pitcher. So we're like, there's a catcher pitching and a pitcher hitting.
Yeah,
as the pitch hitter, so it was kind of funny. Like, it was just one of those weird, quirky things in that game.
I remember that series vividly because I wasn't at any of the games, but my annual family vacation is always July 4th. We go up to Cape Cod, and my whole dad's side of the family meets up at Cape Cod. And obviously that is, like, way more Mets fans gathering in one place than I'm used to.
Yeah,
used to just, like, you know, watching the games with my dad or, you know, or with Michael. Whenever my family gets together, it's really special because I get to watch the games with a lot of Mets fans at once. That series was obviously while I was up there with my family. And so I just remember, like, watching those games and us, like, freaking out as a group. So that's always, like, the games around July 4th that are good always, like, stick in my mind because of that. Because I'm always with my family for those. So.
Oh, I do have another good 2016 one. It was against the Twins at the end of the year when, like, every win was important.
Right.
And pretty sure Hansel Robles blew it. And
sounds about right.
And then then Grandy, I want to say, I think it went to extra innings. And I want to say Grandy hit a home run in the 10th and then in the 11th. I don't think it was the 9th and the 10th. I think it was the 10th and the 11th.
Ooh, I think I was at the gym during this, and I heard it on the radio while I was at the gym, and I was losing my mind in the
yes!
gym.
And I think that's the first time in Mets history, like, any player has hit 2 home runs in, like, back-to-back innings in an extra inning game to win it. And I was like, Grandy!
I've been in the gym for a lot of, like, epic Mets wins where I have to, like, and, like, listening to Howie on the radio while I'm at the gym, and I've had to, like, suppress my, like, urge to just, like, scream in public. I think another one like that was, what was the game when Conforto and Frazier hit the back-to-back home runs to win the game? I was at the gym
for that, too. That was against the Marlins, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the Marlins. I was at the gym for that, too.
Or was it the Pirates? It was
and I just remember, like, being at the gym and, like, doing squats, like, being like, bah!
All right, Kel, like, that was me in 2015 because I was working 2 jobs at the time. So I was watching, like, the playoff games on Gamecast, like, at my deck. And I'm like, ah! Ah!
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, I'm a weirdo who likes to work out, like, really late at night, especially in grad school. It's kind of subsided now, but in grad school, I, like, used to go to the gym at, like, 9 p.m. because no one would be there, and so that was my favorite time to go. And so I've been at the gym for a lot of, like, weird Mets moments that I've heard Howie's voice for, so. Those are some fun memories, but we're going to close, the listener submissions with my personal favorite.
This one was great. I agree with you, Allison.
All of you submitted fantastic memories, and I'm jealous of every single one of you, but this is the best one. From Michael on Twitter. The best game I ever attend is the next one I attend after this is over. Preach,
yes.
Michael. Preach.
Yes, we are in total agreement with you, Michael.
Freaking
whatever real. They give us the clearance, it's just gonna be like a pilgrimage to Citi Field.
I know, pilgrimage is the exact right word. That is what it's gonna be like. Oh man,
just people camped out for days in front of the Citi Field, in front of the rotunda.
I'm imagining, like, people building, like, random shrines at the home run apple outside the stadium, just, like, putting bobbleheads on it and being like, please, baseball gods.
Please, please let us have baseball. Yeah. Well, because I don't want to lose this Benicio Strowman for nothing.
I know, that would be very upsetting. That would be upsetting. So we're going to close out the show this week, like we do every week, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. So, Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win was I woke up on the morning of March 25th, and I had two texts from my friend, and it was her new baby girl.
Yay!
I wasn't expecting it, because she was due March 20th, and she said, you know, if nothing happens, they're going to induce me next Thursday, which was March 26th. So I was like, okay, so I wasn't expecting anything until March 26th. But I guess she went into labor. And so that was just a nice surprise to wake up to. Emma Faye is her name.
Very nice.
Yeah, Faye was my friend's grandmother. I've known my friend Heather since we were three. We went to preschool together. And her son, her firstborn, is my godson. And, you know, it was kind of funny because my grandmother had emphysema, and she was, like, in and out of nursing homes towards the end. And then Faye, my friend's grandmother, Heather's grandmother, fell and broke her hip. So she ended up in the same nursing home as my grandmother.
Oh, my gosh.
So then they became friends in the nursing home. So it was just kind of fun that, you know, when I would visit my grandmother, I'd see Faye. And so when I got the name, I was like, Faye, because she was the sweetest, like this little diminutive, like, I don't even think she was 5 feet. And she had this, like, just fun Irish accent. And So I just a sweet, sweet lady. So when I saw the name, I was like, it was perfect. So
that is perfect.
Yeah. So congratulations to my friend. And it kind of hurts because I wasn't able to visit her in the hospital like I did when she had William, my godson. You know, and then I had to say, hey, can I have something sent to the house? Are you okay accepting packages? And so it's just kind of a weird time. But you know, I was like, you're going to have quite a story to tell your daughter about when she was born.
Yeah, exactly. All these babies being born right now, like all these parents are going to be able to tell their kids, like, it was a really weird time to be in the hospital.
And yeah. So congratulations to Heather. And, you know, I can't wait to meet little Emma. And I'm sure she already sent me a picture of Willie with her being a big brother holding
cute
Emma. So yes, congratulations to the whole family. And I hope I get to meet her soon.
Yay, it's so nice because it's a reminder, like, it the times are weird, but it's a reminder that, like, life keeps happening.
Yeah, like, it, life goes on. Yeah, like, there's still hope, there's still, you know, life, there's still, you know, there's still good.
Yeah, exactly. So on that similar note of, like, life going on during this weird crisis time, my dad's 60th birthday was over the weekend on the 28th.
Happy birthday, Mr. McKee.
Yes. So it was his birthday, and obviously we had plans that were different from what happened.
Yeah.
So we had plans, like, Michael was supposed to come down, and we were supposed to all go out to dinner, and none of that happened. I still think that we made the most of it. A lot of, like, local breweries are struggling right now because their tap rooms can't be open during this, and they're all small businesses, you know, and a lot of them have already gone under. But those that remain are doing curbside pickup of their beers, so they'll either, like, fill cans or growlers with their beer, and you can go pick it up at the brewery from 6 feet away, of course. There's, like, kind of two breweries close-ish to my house, about 10 minutes away, each of them. So we ordered a bunch of beer from each of them, and we picked it up at the breweries, and then we had a quiet celebration at home. And it was really nice to just, like, feel like we were supporting the local breweries, because they're my favorite places to be around here near my parents' house. Like, I have a lot of memories at both those places, and so I really miss going, and so it was our way to support support them and hope that they survive through this, through this crisis. And we're going to keep doing that. And we already ordered more beer for next weekend. And so, my mom still got a cake and everything from the grocery store. And so we had our own little celebration at home. So it was nice.
Yeah, you make the most of it. Yeah, happy birthday, Mr. McKeague.
So that is the show this week. We will be back next week. We have a guest next week, so get excited for that. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com. The March Badness Tournament is in the final stages, as we mentioned at the top of the show, so go vote for that. We have content going up all the time. We have Dave's weird Omegle stuff.
That took a turn. That was a good one today.
It was good. So, like, Dave, in addition to his MLB The Show prowess of League of Bartolo Colognes, another one of Dave's, like, semi-viral posts was back when he, the first Omegle post he did was when he asked random people on Omegle if Lucas Duda is good. And so he has done sort of the sequel to that. I won't give any spoilers, but he's done another Omegle-related post, so look out for that. We're doing lots of silly, weird content just to try to keep everyone engaged during this time without baseball. Looking back, I think we are going to have a series of best games we've ever been to, like, as far as the staff are concerned, so keep a lookout.
Okay, sorry, I have to interrupt for a second, because Ooh. Mark Johnson is on deck wearing number 20, and it just looks so weird now that that's not Pete, and really, Mark Johnson.
Mark Johnson.
That's a blast from the past.
that's remembering some guys.
Okay, I'm sorry, continue.
But yeah, we're gonna keep having lots of silly content for you guys just to keep everyone entertained while we wait for baseball to come back. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And Maggie is at Maggie162. So you can follow each of us on Twitter, follow the show on Twitter. You can subscribe to the podcast, so please do that if you haven't already. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to our whole suite of fantastic shows. You can rate and review the podcast, so please do that if you haven't. It really helps other people find the show. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there's no crime.